Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, we're actually finally here today. We had some technical difficulties getting this thing started today. Had a bunch of recordings that I could not get into the chat room. I couldn't even, or into the studio. I couldn't even actually get the studio up and going. But it looks like we finally got it. Hopefully the weather doesn't impede this show. We've got actually some good stuff for you tonight. I'm glad that if anybody actually does show up tonight, that this is going to be actually a decent show. I've got the chat room open right now. And if you want to call in, the call-in number is 646-478-5284. And I don't see anybody in the chat room right now, but it is open if any of you want to go there and see what is going on. We do have, like I said, we do have a good show scheduled for tonight. And hopefully this will work out the way that we want it to. Just sent out the notices to FaceLink. Facebook, Twitter, and Blog Talk Radio that we are on the air. And we hopefully the sound quality tonight is good. Last week it wasn't quite so good, so I had to do some things. I had to get on the phone and call in that way through as a guest. So hopefully this week this will be a better show. I know I'm starting 24 minutes late, but here we go. This nation's in trouble, folks, and a lot of us do not even realize it, though the warning bells have been going off for a century or more now. This nation as a whole and this nation's government has been totally ignoring what is coming. They keep adding more and more people off of Islamic beliefs and places to places of authority, to places of schooling where our children are being taught, to places in our society where the police are supposedly enforcing laws but are really getting into position to push Sharia law when the time comes. And we have to realize this here, folks. Sharia law and our Constitution are not compatible. And if you really think that I'm wrong on this one, look up Dearborn, Michigan. Sharia law is all but enforced there. The Constitution doesn't really mean too much of anything there, and that is in America, and you think not. I had asked Kathy Hinners to be a guest on my show, but I haven't heard anything from her. As of yet, she may show up. Hopefully she does, but if she doesn't, I'm going to go ahead and continue on with this show because this is stuff that we all need to know about here. Most of it, Sharia, the laws that govern Islam, Muslim Brotherhood, they believe in Sharia law. They are bringing it here. And a lot of this is coming from Tennessee because that is where Kathy Hinners is. A lot of her information is very good, very respectable, very authentic. We know what is going on down there mainly because of her. But it's happening again. Her latest post on her site called Daily Roll Call reads like a warning to our children and to us all collectively. It's happening again. Some Metro Nashville schools are facilitating field trips to the Islamic Center of Nashville, which has many parents wondering once again why the need to send school children to a mosque. What is the historical value of public school students attending this field trip? The Islamic Center of Nashville is hardly free of issues when it comes to supporting those with radical anti-American, anti-Christian, anti-Jew sentiment. Most below are just some of the examples of what this mosque has been involved in, including a video clip from a documentary titled Losing Our Sons. I don't know if I recorded that one, but I do have some things recorded. Hopefully this will be an informative show. This is the story of a Christian young man who began attending prayers at Islamic Center of Nashville, who then converted to Islam. Carlos Bledsoe of Memphis, Tennessee, took the name of his imam, Abdul Hakim Muhammad, was radicalized at the Islamic Center of Nashville. Carlos was sent to school in Yemen, where he spent 18 months, four of which he was imprisoned. And upon his return to the United States on a mission from Allah, he opened fire on the Little Rock Recruiting Center, where he killed Private William Andy Long. Now, my idea on this whole thing is, if I go overseas to like Yemen or someplace else to go to school to learn Islam, one of the big dampers on me wanting to learn this is being imprisoned for most of, you know, during at least 4 months of the time that I'm there to learn about Islam. This is ridiculous. But who is Abdul Hakim Muhammad? He was the imam at the Islamic Center of Nashville, ICN, from 1999 to 2007, who came to Nashville from the radical Brooklyn Al-Farouq Mosque, which had a documented history of raising money for terrorists, and is the same mosque attended by the blind sheikh who was convicted in the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. And let's see if I've got that. The hatred towards American or Christians. Let's see if I've got this here. I'm pretty sure I do. I'm pretty sure I downloaded it anyway. Maybe I didn't. I'll keep talking while I go ahead and do this. Trying to get a hold of the things that I need to get a hold of here. We are in the process. Like I said, I had all kinds of bad things happen this afternoon. Mostly it had to do with the weather, but there it is. I will download this now. Hopefully it will come in shortly, in a short enough period of time that I can actually play this for you guys. This is, you know, I recorded two of them here, and one of them is called Hatred Towards Christians. I'm not sure. One of them had really iffy audio on it, and as I keep trying to figure out what is going on with the world and with America and Islam and the invasion of Islam and Muslims, it amazes me that 90% of our government just really doesn't give a dang about what is going on here. And they are constantly doing what they can to make sure that the people here do not find out what is going on, because you know, the things that we have going on in this country really actually don't fit with the way that we live our lives. I mean, one of the things that I'm trying to download right now is one of the former imams of Islam talking about honor killings and how that is a part of Islam, how that is a part of what they believe in, and the stuff that they believe in, you know, comes from Pakistan and places like that. But when they come here, they bring that here too. And it's really kind of one of these things that's really scary, because we can't help but try to think that, well, maybe they're good people. Maybe if we just allow them in, they will change and be more like us. But they don't. They come here, they join us, and then they try to change us. And that is not the way that this is supposed to be. That is not the way that this is supposed to happen. You go to someone else's country, and what you do if you go to somebody else's country is you have a whole set of laws that you have to follow. And you have to follow these laws mainly because you come from another country. The laws of your country don't country. So that country has its own set of laws that you have to follow. Well, that's not how they're doing it here in the United States. They're coming here and they are doing what they can. And I know I'm bringing this out just a little bit longer. I got the things in here. The first one is hatred against Christians. And it's a former imam talking about how they need to take over Christianity and how people who believe in Christians are hated. Now, like I said, one of these two is in bad shape. It's got a lot of echo in it, but it's easy to hear if you listen.
Theorizing that he got involved with going to a mosque in Nashville called the Islamic Center of Nashville.
The former Olive Tree Education Director, Abdul Hakim Muhammad, was the imam at the ICN Mosque while Carlos was in Nashville.
This country will not be the richest country on earth because it is the worst country on earth.
Carlos took the same name when he converted to Islam.
He was going to change his religion from Baptist as a Christian, which he grew up in a Baptist church as a Christian.
Christians have lost much of their basics and tenets of faith. The truth of Christianity was lost at its earliest stages of infancy.
Tomorrow, they'll celebrate Christmas, assuming that Christ is a God or a son of God. There is no greater lie than this. The greatest lie of all time.
Okay. Now, you hear what they say about this, hate and hatred. This excerpt is just one example of the hatred towards Christians spewed by the past imams of the Islamic Center of Nashville, where Nashville public school educators think it's a good idea to have a field trip. You know, and that last line in there saying that Christianity is the greatest lie in history. I have my ideas on that one because, you know, Jesus Christ is the Son of God. God is the one that created this, created the everything. Whereas Islam was created by a man who was a pedophile in the first place. And everybody knows this, but how can anyone follow a religion that has a pedophile as the main person? I don't understand this. In the spring of 2011, the Islamic Center of Nashville's Imam Ahmed Mohammed gave a lecture in Nashville in which he defended the Egyptian police forced virginity tests reportedly performed on female protesters in Tahrir Square. He also talked about honor killings and confirmed that they do occur throughout the Muslim world and even suggested that they used to occur in the U.S., but no longer because of how crazy our moral ethics have become. He testified against the anti-terrorism bill during the 2011 legislative session and was also a participant in the Tennessee Department of Homeland Security's closed-door 2011 meeting with the Tennessee DHS regional advisor, James Cotter. And here is what he has to say about honor killings.
Those people are not Persians. That means they are not good people. And this is the average Egyptian man who look at it. If you are not married, you are not Persian, that, like, that probably will cause the cultural honor killing. We have an honor killing in Egypt. We have an honor killing in Pakistan.
Okay. That was the one that was a little hard to hear. But what he was saying was, if you're not married and you're a woman, if you're not married and you're not a virgin, then they have what they call an honor killing, because if you're not a virgin and you're married and you're not married, then your sins are beyond anything anybody can redeem. Not even God can do. So they have to kill you because it's the only thing to do for your honor. Women, and this is what really gets me here. He says that women that are not virgins are a cause of honor killings. Perhaps that mindset of a former imam at the Islamic Center of Nashville should sink in as your daughters attend a field trip to this mosque. This is the same imam that in 2012 invited students from Hendersonville High School to take the Quran as they exited the mosque. The current imam at the Islamic Center of Nashville is Osama Bahawal, who hails from Al-Azhar University in Cairo, Egypt, with a degree in Dawah, prophesizing for Islam. His thesis was the establishment of a Dawah curriculum aimed at secularists, atheists, Christians, Jews, and Muslims. Al-Azhar is credited with starting the Islamist movement with training from Islamic radicals and closely tied Muslim Brotherhood, and stands for the propagation of Islam and Sharia as a complete way of life. See what's coming, folks, if we don't listen to this? The mosque's library often reflects the ideology of its leaders. Some of the books found in the Islamic Center of Nashville should be no surprise, considering how radical their past imams have been. And their books like Islam and Christianity by Mrs. Ulfat Aziz Us-Samad, available now through Amazon. And it says, Christianity is too otherworldly. The outcome of such teaching can only be the product of stunted and contorted hypocrites instead of full-grown human beings. Christianity is seen as a corruption of Christ's message, and Islam is the true religion of Jesus. Towards Understanding Islam by Abdul Allah Mawadudi, also available through Amazon. Jihad is a primary is as much a primary duty of the Muslims as are the daily prayers or fasting. The greatest sacrifice made in the way of God is jihad. In it, man sacrifices not only his own life and belongings, but destroys those of others as well. Another book, Veiling and Unveiling by Hala Bint Abdullah, also available through Amazon. It says, the veil shall cover the whole body of the woman, including the face and palms of the hands. Unveiling is a heresy, error, and a violation of both Islamic religion and purified tradition, Sunnah. It is an evidence that a woman who uncovers herself has a weakness in belief that it strips her from chastity and modesty. Additionally, uncovering takes away dignity and the granted legal rights from the women, revealing of her private parts, exposing her shortcomings or faults. A woman being unveiled will be in a state of rebellion against the Islamic society. So, you still think a field trip to the Islamic Center of Nashville is appropriate? Speakers invited often to the Islamic Center of Nashville includes imams such as Siraj Wahaj, who was raised as a Baptist but converted to Islam under the leadership of the Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan. He is the imam at the Al-Taqwa Mosque in New York. Now, I'm pretty sure I'm not getting a lot of these names right, but I really don't care. He preaches that the U.S. should and will become an Islamic state because Islam is better than democracy. And there they are again. You know, this is not a democracy, it's a constitutional republic. Stay it with me, folks. Constitutional republic. Islam is better than democracy. Allah will cause his deen, Islam, as a complete way of life. Islam to prevail over every kind of system, and you know what? It will happen. If only Muslims were clever politically, they could take over the United States and replace its constitutional government with a caliphate. If we were united and strong, we'd elect our own emir and give allegiance to him. Take my word, if 8 million Muslims unite in America, the country will come to us, he said in 1992. You don't get involved in politics because it's the American thing to do. You get involved in politics because politics are a weapon to use in the cause of Islam. Looking towards folks, and don't doubt me on this one. I have this on good authority. If we don't start to rise up against this invasion of this country by Islam and the Muslim Brotherhood, then we will be to blame for what is coming. And mark my words here, folks. NWCR is back, and so is Conservative Nation Media. Now, welcome to the show. That was a rather long entry, but that is good. But this is on the 15th day of October in the year of our Lord 2017 for the 336th episode of the show. And we will be right back.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Roger that. News sources that there is serious talk of Antifa having a nationwide protest slash riot. I think it was like November 4th or 3rd.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
New Wise Conservatism Radio Show with your host, Robert Garding. At the rate our leaders are ignoring our Constitution, we're finding that they cannot lead, nor do they want to keep us safe from our enemies. And yes, we have some. From the crossroads of America, the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show is brought to you through the traditional American Patriot Network with the Doctor of this Republic, showing that the truth can be told to save this nation. And now, on with the show.
Okay, we are back. It actually kind of doesn't look like Kathy's going to be able to make it tonight, but that's okay. I've got a lot of good information, and a lot of it's from her. So that's almost like she's here, but I've got the studio right in line with what I'm looking at here. So if she shows up, I'll be able to bring her right in. But in 2008, during the largest terrorism funding trial in the U.S. history, the United States versus Holy Land Foundation, a document published in 1991 outlined Muslim plans to take over America. An explanatory memorandum on the general strategic goal for the group seized in 2004, FBI raid of the Virginia home of a Muslim Brotherhood cooperative was presented during the trial as evidence of a civilization jihad process. It outlined the Muslim Brotherhood's goal to conduct a grand jihad in eliminating and destroying Western civilization from within and sabotaging its miserable house by their hands and the hands of the believers so that it is eliminated. Now, I've been telling you folks for a long dang time that that is what they have in mind for us. But it doesn't seem like our government is listening at all. And it doesn't seem that anyone on the left is listening at all. But for several decades, well-organized and well-funded effort to subvert our constitutional republic and replace it with an Islamic government under Islamic rule law has focused on infiltrating all levels and branches of the U.S. government. More recently, the Muslim Brotherhood presence within the American political landscape has intensified, accelerated, and become more visible with the establishment of several nonprofit political action organizations. The Muslim Brotherhood stated goal of transforming American society within in preparation for an eventual takeover is clearly moving forward, fueled by the efforts of those of these groups and their burgeoning success within the Ummah or Muslim community. As early as 1987, a declassified FBI confidential informant document described the Muslim Brotherhood as quote, a political action front groups with no traceable ties to Muslim groups, unquote, that are organizing external political support to influence both public opinion in America and the U.S. government and its leadership. The informant who disclosed this information told authorities that the Muslim Brotherhood acknowledged the need to peacefully get inside the United States government for the purpose of meeting the ultimate goal of overthrowing all non-Islamic governments. And that right there just sets the American government right in the middle of their crosshairs. And I'm sorry, you liberals who are snowflakes. Crosshairs is something that needs to be used here because that's exactly what's going on. In 2010, one such peaceful group, Project Mobilize, was created by M. Yasser Tabara to empower and engage the political potential of the Muslim community. Its mission statement called for the exploitation of the growing political capital of the Ummah, the promotion of issues important to the Muslim Americans, and the development of strategies for political advocacy on their behalf. In 2011, Project Mobilize began fielding its first Muslim candidates for political office. Now, we've had several here in Indiana. You've heard me talking about them before, and I've mentioned them before. I will mention them again, but they're part of this whole thing, I'm thinking. Project Mobilize's founder, Tabara, is the former executive director at of the Chicago chapter of the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE. You've heard of that one, a Muslim Brotherhood affiliate and unindicted co-conspirator in the Holy Land Foundation Hamas funding trial. Other board members include Safa Zarzar, the secretary general of another unindicted co-conspirator and Muslim Brotherhood front, the Islamic Society of North America, or ISNA, and there's one here down in Plainfield. I think the biggest one is down in Plainfield here in Indiana. And that's like only about 30 miles from me. So, that's not really good. Osama Jamal, vice president of the Mosque Foundation, a former center for terrorism funding fundraising and haven for Hamas operatives, and that's here in the United States. In 2014, the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., representatives from eight Muslim Brotherhood affiliated groups announced formation of the United States Council of Muslim Organizations, or the USCMO, a political party for Muslims and the first religion-based political party in U.S. history. At the meeting, the founders disclosed their plans to expand Muslim participation in American political process by encouraging more Muslims to vote, work on political campaigns, and run for offices themselves. See what they're doing here, folks? Osama Jamal, who was involved in fundraising for convicted terrorist Sami al-Arain and serves as director for the Muslim Brotherhood affiliate, the Muslim American Society, or MAS, headed the new organization. MAS, created in the early 1990s, was itself begun as a U.S. branch of the Muslim Brotherhood and was designated a terrorist group by the United Arab Emirates. Mazen Mokhtar, another USCMO founding member, also had MAS ties, having served as its executive director. An Egyptian-born imam, Mokhtar served as webmaster for a site that solicited funds for the Taliban and Chechen jihadists. In 2007, he was indicted by then New Jersey Attorney General Chris Christie for tax evasion and filing false tax returns. In 2015, a new organization, Jetpack Inc., Justice, Education, and Technology Policy Advocacy Center, was begun by Nadim Mazen, Massachusetts' first Muslim city council member. Jetpack was established as an open call for American Muslims to immerse themselves in local politics. The group trains American Muslim community leaders and educates them about the political process. According to their websites, they have prepared more than 15 aspiring candidates for office in Maine, New York, Rhode Island, and California. The group's activities include development of proprietary software for social media outreach, fundraising and canvassing techniques, media communication, excuse me, and campaign strategy skills, as well as advice on combating negative impressions of Muslims. In addition, Jetpack teaches a course on U.S. government and politics at a Massachusetts Islamic school that focuses on grassroots organizings and the history of the civil rights movement. And if that doesn't scare you, I don't know what does. Nothing. Following his stint as a Cambridge City Council member, Mazen, a founding member of CARE Massachusetts and former president of MIT's MSA, announced plans to run for Congress as the third elected Muslim after Keith Hakeem Ellison. That's the one I was talking about from, that's one of them I was talking about from, he's a Democrat from Minnesota, and Andre Carson, him and his family, Democrats of Indiana, and he's the one I was talking about from Indiana. Just this week, Mazen launched his campaign for Massachusetts' third congressional district seat. A telling indicator of his more radical views is the fact that Mazen opposed President Obama's Countering Violent Extremism, or CVE, program and criticized moderate Muslim groups as promoters of imperialistic style incentives to foist secular attitudes on Muslims. Another political race worth watching involves a CARE official running for the Des Moines, Iowa City Council. Somali Muslim refugee and president of CARE Iowa, Abshir Omar, is running as a Democratic Socialist to represent downtown Des Moines and the city's southwest side. City council members can wield significant power and influence over all aspects of community life. Typically, they make key appointments such as city managers, police and fire department heads, library board members, parks and recreation supervisors, transportation directors, as well as administrators for arts councils, housing authorities, and planning commissions. Now, I will have to get back to this after the messages that are coming because of the plain and simple fact that I have run out of time here, and we're coming up on the end of the first hour. And so I will go to the messages and come back with the rest of that article in just a few minutes and be right back. The call-in number is 646-478-5284. Be right back.
When you need to know what America stands for, Conservative Nation Media will let you know. The Second Amendment is taught here, along with why it needs to stay.
All right, class, let's hear what everyone did this weekend. Jill?
Well, I raised my older sister to a big oak tree. It was at least 100 years old. My mom said I must have set a record or something. And then we went down by a stream and pushed up on this huge rock and saw all of these little minnows swimming around way below us. And then I rescued my little brother from an evil slug king who was guarding him in the bush fortress. And my sister and I brought him back to our super twig fort for safety. And then we all laid out and told stories until it got dark. And the Big Dipper led us all the way home.
Where were you, Jill?
Yeah. We went to the forest. It's not that far away. Anyone want to come this weekend?
Ask your parents to take you and your friends to the forest this week and find the fun, adventurous you. It's closer than you think. Check out discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ag Council.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody, squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed...
680 to 90-10.
Could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Aren't you glad the so-called fairness doctrine doesn't apply here?
Welcome back to Hour 2 of the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show with your host, Robert Garding. This is Kathy Henners of Daily Roll Call, and we need more voices like Robert, who are not afraid of the wrath of the left when the truth is told and it doesn't fit their agenda for us. From the crossroads of America comes the second hour of the show.
Okay, we are back with the second hour of the show. I just checked back in the chat room. There's nobody there. The chat room is open, folks, if you would like to come in join in the show. And we've got our call-in number is 646-478-5284. And now back to the article I was reading. Another political race worth watching involves a CARE official running for the Des Moines, Iowa City Council. And I'm rereading this paragraph because to get you guys back on the lines of what I was talking about. Somali Muslim refugee and president of CARE Iowa, Abshir Omar, is running as a Democratic Socialist to represent downtown Des Moines and the city's southwest side. City council members can wield significant power and influence over all aspects of community life. Excuse me. Typically, they make key appointments such as city managers, police and fire department heads, library board members, parks and recreation supervisors, transportation directors, as well as administrators for arts and councils and house authorities and planning commissions. Now, that is the reason why I reread that is because of the things that these people can do. That's a lot of stuff, folks. Meanwhile, in the background of the Tyra Amatul Wadud, another Islamic operative who intends to run for governor of Massachusetts in the future, should cause grave concern. Wadud, who served on the Massachusetts Commission on the Status of Women, has extensive radical Islamic ties. She served as an executive board member for the CARE Massachusetts and as the general counsel for Jamaat ul Fakra, a.k.a. Muslims of America, a group alleged to have close ties to al-Qaeda. Jamaat ul-Fakra was founded in 1980 by Pakistani Sheikh Jilani, who was associated with the shoe bomber Richard Reid and implicated in the murder of the Wall Street Journal reporter Danny Pearl, according to the Clarion Project. Wadud posted an anti-Semitic article by Jilani on her Facebook that claimed Jewish complicity in the 9/11 and Pearl Harbor attacks. Jamaat ul-Fakra has done more than simply issue social media propaganda, however. The terrorist entity has approximately 24 paramilitary training centers across the U.S., and its members participated in the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. Now, I have told you about these paramilitary training centers across the U.S., and it says approximately 24. I have found 29, and I got that number from Kathy Hinners, who I'm getting all of this information from. So, that should give us a lot of cause for concern. It is known to proselytize and recruit black prison inmates and reportedly seeks to purify Islam through violence. The Center for Policing Terrorism maintains that Jamaat ul-Fakra may be the best positioned group to launch an attack on the United States, or more likely help al-Qaeda to do so. Another Muslim with terrorist ties is a political candidate in Arizona, Southern Baptist convert to Islam, Deidre Abode, a Phoenix attorney and community activist who served as the executive director of CARE Arizona and is currently associated with the Muslim American Society, is seeking the Democratic nomination for U.S. Senator in her state. And you notice these are all Democrats. Just saying. Abood opposes President Trump's policy to temporarily ban refugees from designated Muslim countries rife with terrorism activity. She also opposes the U.S. cruise missile bombing that followed Bashar Assad's use of chemical weapons on Syrian civilians. Identifying as a feminist, Aboud defends her husband's right under Islam to have four wives, although she admits she isn't happy to be, wouldn't be happy with it. She helped raise bail money for deceased Muslim terrorist Elton Simpson when he was convicted of lying to the FBI about his plans to engage in Islamic terrorist activities in Somalia. Simpson, in the first Islamic claimed attack on U.S. soil, tried to kill participants at the Muhammad Cartoon Contest in Garland, Texas in 2015. You remember that one. In 2009, Aboud made a statement about the acceptability of police learning Arabic to better understand the Muslim community. However, she objected to the study of Arabic as a law enforcement tool for investigating potential Islamic terrorist activity, deeming it targeting. Of course she did. Oh, man, I swear, these people are so insane. They think that they can just move into a country. They think they just move in and just do what the hell they want, and that we are all going to be okay with this. No, we're not. And I know that I'm not. That's one of the reasons for this show, folks. And I really hope that somebody comes in. I really hope that that people will listen to this one, because it's got information that is essential to the safety of these United States. And a lot of what's going on, you know, this whole thing with the leftists deciding that they're going to impeach Trump under no uncertain terms. This is something you can fall back on and look at this, because essentially the Democrats who are trying to file for impeachment charges on Trump when he has absolutely done nothing that deserves impeachment in the first place, except try to make America safe. And that is where they are going about it here, because they don't like the idea he's trying to make America safe. And if you try to make America safe, that means he's going to be working on the Muslim aspect of it too. Now, granted, there are good Muslims, but if they are a devout Muslim, you can be assured the Islamic law and Sharia law that dictates that they need to change Christians to Muslims or get rid of them is part of their religion. You have to know this, folks. It's absolutely the truth. And going on to what I was reading, self-described devout Muslim and son of Egyptian immigrant parents, Abdul El Sayed has substantial connections with the Muslim Brotherhood and is running for governor of Michigan. A medical doctor who served as the executive director of the Detroit Health Department at the age of 30, his background includes serving as vice president of his MSA chapter in the University of Michigan during his college years. His wife, Sarah Jukaku, who was described as a mental health doctor, wears a hijab. His father-in-law is a former president and current member of the board member of CARE Michigan. Quite troubling is the fact that El Sayed is endorsed by Linda Salsauer, an advocate for the Muslims initiative, or for the Hamas initiative for the boycott, divestment, and sanctioning of Israel, and an activist who played a major role in pressuring the NYPD to discontinue its surveillance on mosques and Muslim organizations before 9/11, or after 9/11, post 9/11. That surveillance effort had yielded critical information about terrorist activities. Salsauer, one of El Sayed's biggest supporters, is reportedly helping fundraise for El Sayed's gubernatorial campaign. She is also a close friend of the Muslim Brotherhood connected Huma Abedin. and we've all heard of these names now, has family members who have been arrested for aiding and abetting Hamas, openly supports Sharia law, and has been a featured speaker at Muslim Brotherhood groups that were designated as unindicted co-conspirators in the Holy Land Foundation trial, which I started the show off with. All of the above demonstrate that the Muslim Brotherhood is increasing its political clout in America. As more of its candidates are elected to office, deeper penetration of American society comes within their grasp. And you better believe that is exactly what their plans are here, folks. Their stated goal to destroy our society from within and replace the Constitution with the tenets of Sharia could become a reality. Their adeptness at appealing to the American public by using the coded language of multiculturalism and by professing a moderate Islam is proved to be an unfortunate asset. In the words of former FBI analyst and expert on the Muslim Brotherhood, John Guiandolo, who has closely studied their deceptive language and appearance, Muslim Brotherhood operatives are suit-wearing jihadists who pretend they're friendly, but they're not. America should be alert and aware. Folks, we have to realize that we are in a war. The war has been brought to us in the form of a jihad against American Western civilization, and that includes us, folks. They are here to infiltrate and take over. There is no other reason for it, and anyone who thinks that is wrong and will find out in the long run when they become the casualties of this jihad against America. They have stated their intentions for decades and even longer, and we have totally ignored that warning. If America falls to this, it won't be because we failed to let everyone know. It will be because the American government and many of the American people ignored the warnings. Their jihad comes in three parts, folks, and I've told you this before. The first two, moving in and making neighbors, then infiltrating higher places of authority, have already happened. The third is to get enough numbers of their members to go to war and take over from within. That is next. Be warned. After weeks of countenancing all sorts of national anthem protests and incoherent liberal platitudes given as justification for them, the NFL commissioner Roger Goodell finally decided this week that he'd had enough. In a strongly worded memo to the league's team owners, Goodell wrote that, quote, "We believe that everyone should stand for the national anthem," unquote, and that the league wanted, quote, "to honor our flag and our country, and our fans expect that of us," unquote. The national anthem protests haven't gone over well with the American public, and Goodell's reversal didn't quite go over so well in those corners of the NFL that have of late become an adjunct of the American far left. One player in particular, Tampa Bay Buccaneers defensive tackle Gerald McCoy, seems to stop just short of promising open revolt if Goodell's rather strong recommendation were to become official league policy. And here's the problem. Goodell saying this made it official league policy, you twit. He said on Adam Schefter's ESPN show, "If you take protesting the anthem away from them, there's going to be an uproar. I don't think guys are going to like it," McCoy continued. "I think it's going to be an uproar if that is to happen, because you're basically taking away a constitutional right to freedom of speech. If guys want to have it, if guys want to have a, I guess you would call it a peaceful protest, I don't think that's right to take that away." Here is what McCoy does not understand. Sure, there is the constitutional right to freedom, the constitutional right to freedom of speech, but there are consequences to speech if it goes against American law. And I said this in a show that I did a couple weeks ago. U.S. code actually states, and I read this on the air last week. I read this on the air in my Facebook Live update a couple Thursdays ago, that the U.S. code says that if you're in uniform, you have to stand at attention with your heart, hand over your heart. And if you have a headdress, you take it off and you put it on your left hand shoulder or your right hand. Yeah, your left hand shoulder, which puts your hand over your heart. That is how you do it. Standing is not that freaking hard to do. But McCoy, an 8-year veteran, isn't one of the new kneeling contingents, surprisingly enough. However, he buys into the same insanely faulty logic that everyone taking a knee seems to harbor. I've had to type these same points out 1,473,264 times in articles about the NFL anthem kerfuffle, so I'm going to make it quick. And this is from Conservative Tribune, I think, is where I got all of this. But he wrote it out, and here's what it says. A, constitutionally protected speech can still get you fired, especially if you do it in the workplace. If you want a quick demonstration of this very salient fact, try wearing a David Duke 92 campaign shirt into work on Dress Down Friday and see what happens. It's like I have said many times before, you have the constitutional right to say and do things, but what you people are forgetting is there is a time and a place for everything, and with everything comes a consequence to actions, good or bad. B, there's already an uproar over the national anthem, and it's coming from the NFL's consumers. You know, the fine people that have made the Gerald McCoys of the NFL millionaires. If McCoy doesn't think so, maybe he should ask himself why Roger Goodell went from embracing the protest to rather subtly telling the players to knock it off in the span of 2 short weeks. Spoiler alert, it's not because America agrees with the protesters. C. The NFL is under no compunction to subsidize the political activities of any of its players at the expense of its bottom line. There are plenty of opportunities for constructive political engagement that do not involve disrespecting the anthem, the flag, and those who have fought for it every Sunday, Monday, or Thursday. D. The NFL is a private organization. If its executives say that the players must stand for the national anthem, players must stand for the national anthem. If McCoy doesn't want to, he is free to find another line of work. While Goodell's memo was a pretty strong hint that the league has had it with the protests, and there have also been rumors that it just won't end at hints, Sports Illustrated and other outlets have reported NFL owners will consider making a rule requiring players to stand for the anthem as early as next week, although alternative options will likely be on the table. If McCoy's promised uproar occurs, it will only further marginalize a league that's woefully out of touch with its fan base. Commissioner Goodell has finally had enough of the players' childish attitudes. The American people had enough of it a long time ago, and we, the American people, have long since gone way past the idea that these are babies that can't seem to get their way, so they're going to cry about it. As the little crybabies of the NFL decide to disrespect our flag and our country to the chagrin of the people, coal miners in Virginia did the manly thing. And this one actually is pretty freaking great, if you ask me. I have to see if I can find this, because I know I put it into my audio. And stuff like that. I know that it's here. Well, maybe it isn't. But I'm going to have to put it in before I go too much farther. But manly work. Okay. I'll browse here for a second. Go my shows and clips. And I'll get my audio number 3, which is Real Men Stand. And that is, I thought I had downloaded this one the other day, but I guess I didn't. It's too bad, too, because it's a good one. But hopefully it'll come in as quickly as the other ones did, because they really do need to be there. And the article that I had found was on Facebook when I first saw it, and I went and clicked on the link to it, and it took me to a page where the article was. And in just under 1 minute of footage from a coal mine in West Virginia, the miners have managed to put Barack Obama, the NFL, and America haters everywhere on the road to shame. That is, if they have any shame. And sometimes I kind of wonder about that. While Obama is enjoying his retirement on perpetual vacation and millionaire football players are refusing to stand for the flag like spoiled little brats, real men are doing what they always do, getting their hands dirty and going to work, but not for millions of dollars. In a dramatic video, and I've got the audio of it posted here, but in a dramatic video posted on social media by coal miner Shane Wriston, a group of blue-collar workers is preparing to do something they do hundreds of times a year, descend deep into the earth to do a tough and dangerous job that few people appreciate. These are real men who appreciate what the veterans have done to keep them safe. They know what to do. So listen as the coal miners start their day underground. Listen to what they do just after their meeting and their prayer.
Ramparts we watch were so gallantly streaming, and the rockets rang.
And then after that, they went down underground to do their daily work. But that is what men do when they appreciate this country. That is what men do when they truly appreciate the freedoms that they have, and they know that they're losing them because of little babies in tight pants and wearing football helmets. They're saying, stuff that in your helmets and smoke it, you pansy babies of the NFL who are disrespecting the flag. These men were real men, not wannabes like you, and they did the right thing. Amen to that. We will be right back after these messages.
$80 million voters can pull the wrong lever, and it's still the wrong lever.
Vietnam was the war where American troops showed valor and bravery on the battlefield, but where the enemy was
was not only like ghosts in the jungle, but they were superstitious too. This gave rise to the Vampire Patrol, six men who fought the whole war together, spreading death, destruction, and vampire voodoo lore into the ranks of the Viet Cong. Now, years later, Matt Joseph works as a private investigator in Tucson, Arizona, while his best friend and former commander of the Vampire Patrol is chief of police of the South Tucson Precinct. The job that gets Matt on the case is one that brings the Vampire Patrol back from the past and places it smack dab in the middle of the present, taking him to a small town on the Indian reservation called Lukachukai in northern Arizona. There, a mountain named Root Butte not only holds mystery, but a cloud of fear that oozes out of it into the night sky. Matt is the one to find out what is going on here, and without becoming part of the nasty plan involved. Night Owls is the first in a new series of mysteries with Matt Joseph, Private Eye, and is on sale now at https://www.createspace.com/486-9187. This book is also available in digital form. That's Night Owls, a Matt Joseph mystery by Robert P. Garding, and I approve of this message.
Okay, the leftist media would like conservatives like us to think we're just a few lonely voices in the wilderness. But don't be fooled. Americans that identify themselves as conservatives outnumber liberals by a 2-to-1 margin, according to numerous polls, even those by the liberals themselves. If you respect traditional American values, there's a place for you to call home on the internet. It's traditionalamericamovement.com, or TradAM, as we call our home. TraditionalAmericanMovement.com is the place where real conservatives can meet up without turf wars and find out what's new in the conservative community. Join up, find out what's happening, and be a part of the conservative revolution, all on Traditional America Movement, all one word, .com. That's www.TraditionalAmericanMovement.com. I hope to see you there soon. TradAm is a liberal free website.
Hey, sweetie, what's going on?
Well, honey, I have some news.
Okay, what?
All that training paid off. I got the job.
Oh, I knew you would get it. So when do you start?
When you donate stuff to Goodwill, you help provide job training for people right here in your community. Goodwill, donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Okay. That was a lot of fun. We are in the process of having the rest of this show go almost as smoothly as the first part did. And today, that's essentially as Bob Seger Day, as you've noticed that most all of my bumper music is Bob Seger. so that is a good thing. I've got a bunch of his stuff downloaded right now, which is cool. Dan Pfeiffer, former senior advisor to former President Barack Obama, has now host and a co-host of a podcast called Pod Save America, wrote his detailed plan to solve mass shootings like the recent one in Las Vegas. In his post at the Crooked Podcasting Platform site, Pfeiffer writes that the reason no major gun control laws have been passed and signed is mostly because Republicans are in the pocket of National Rifle Association, but also because Democrats don't push the issue hard enough. No. It's because of the Constitution, you dumb twit. And right to bear arms shall not be infringed. Or don't you know what that means, Pfeiffer? He writes that he believes the United States should put certain laws into place, and here are his ideas, which usually go against the Second Amendment. But I will go ahead and put them here anyway. This first one, a national gun registry so law enforcement officials can know when someone is compiling an arsenal. The government can track purchases of allergy medicines that can be used to make methamphetamine and fertilizers that can be used to make bombs like the one used in Oklahoma City in 94, but not deadly assault weapons. That's absurd. Well, the problem is assault weapons, 99% of the people don't own them, can't own them. If I went out and tried to buy an assault weapon, I wouldn't be able to get it. Some people can, but the problem with that is no matter what laws you make, there's always going to be some people who can because they don't care about laws. But essentially, there is one a law there because everyone who gets a gun has to apply for a gun permit, don't they? I mean, for crying out loud, that means the government can track them and do everything that they want to that way anyway. His next one, tracking and limiting purchase of ammunition. The Democrats have been working on this for years, limiting what someone's magazine can hold. I mean, you know, having a 50-round magazine is against the law. But somebody who's breaking the law, yeah, that doesn't matter now, does it? Next one, requiring that guns use smart gun technology, which would dramatically reduce accidental deaths, particularly among children who, according to a 2016 study, are dying accidental deaths at the hands of guns at the rate of one every other day. First off, I don't think that guns have hands, do you? You really don't think that they do you? I'm just saying. Another one. A national gun buyback program similar to the one Australia instituted after a mass shooting that killed 35 people. That incident was in 1996. There hasn't been another one since. Yeah, you really think so, huh? And that would probably work just as well as the Junkers for Cash program that Obama tried when he tried to buy back cars. It didn't work, and this won't either. People will not give up their guns, no matter what you liberals think. The Second Amendment of the Constitution guarantees this. While Pfeiffer never says the word confiscation, a gun buyback program is essentially one because you have to turn in the firearms within a certain time period or face consequences. It makes things easier for authorities to identify who has the guns if the country also implements the national gun registry he first suggested. He also writes that the interpretation of the Second Amendment that prevails on the far right today was reverse engineered to pander to fantasists. Really? Pfeiffer admits that many on the Democratic side deny they want to have guns confiscated. For some, they want all of them. Good luck. And for others, only want a select few. That was Dan Pfeiffer at Dan Pfeiffer. And if the Dems want to win the fight over guns, we must change our strategy and play to win by saying what we really think. Well, either way, at least some of the people on the left are honest about what their true intentions are, even though they know without a doubt that the American people have been voting them out of office because of their views en masse due to their insane ideals for four elections now, and they just keep it right on up. Dan Pfeiffer is a great example of this. It's amazing President Trump is doing what the people elected him to do, and yet the left has been in a tizzy to get him impeached since that first day. On Thursday and Friday, Trump did another thing that he promised by starting to dismantle Obamacare piece by piece, and the left is going absolutely nuts over this. President Donald Trump suspended the Obamacare cost-sharing reduction program on Thursday, otherwise known as Obamacare subsidies, as part of a strategy to dismantle Obamacare. White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders said in a statement, on guidance from the Department of Justice, the Department of Human Services has concluded that there is no appropriation for cost-sharing reduction payments to insurance companies under Obamacare. In light of this analysis, the government cannot lawfully make the cost-sharing reduction payments. The United States House of Representatives sued the previous administration in federal court by making these payments reduction appropriation, and the court agreed that the payments is not lawful. The bailout of insurance companies through these unlawful payments is yet another example of how the previous administration abused the law to prop up a broken system. Congress needs to repeal and replace the disastrous Obamacare law and provide real relief to the American people. The cost-sharing reduction payment program gives health insurance companies subsidies that help cover the cost of low-income and high-cost patients on the Obamacare exchanges. Democrats and Republicans disagree on the impact that the subsidies would have on the individual health insurance market. Congressional Budget Office, or CBO, argued in their analysis that rescinding the Obamacare subsidies would cause average premiums on the Obamacare exchanges to increase by roughly 20%. While a study commissioned by Senate Republicans and conducted by McKinsey and Company found that Obamacare insurance regulations, such as community ratings, essential health benefits, and guaranteed issue, were largely to blame for the recent spikes in premiums and deductibles. Conservatives, such as Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky and Daniel Horowitz, have argued that the cost-sharing reduction payment program amounts to a bailout fund for the health insurance companies. And now he wants to do something else that the left hates him for, but the people want, and that is to build the wall. Not just part of a wall, like all the other administrations in the past have said, oh, we can build part of the wall now and part of it later and part of it later on and part of it later on, when they know without a doubt the part that's built later and later and later on and farther on down the line will never be built. But it's like I said, it's not just part of the wall, but the whole thing all at once. And oh, my left had orgasms of agony over that one. I cannot understand the left and their complete hatred for the way this country was formed. But it is this country's forming that gave them the right to do what they do and get rich doing what they do. So go figure. Even MSNBC and Eminem are getting into the act. Trump can do no right, but Obama, who actually did little right, could do no wrong. On MSNBC, Joy Reid on her show called AM Joy argued that President Trump is engaging in extortion by making Obamacare, which wasn't failing, fail, and then, quote, essentially go back to Congress with hostages, unquote. It wasn't failing, Jay. It wasn't failing. Every bit of the news from the left and the right that I've been getting for the past year have been telling me that Obamacare is failing. And you're on a show called AM Joy on MSNBC, which is a news channel? No wonder everybody thinks that you're fake news. After playing a montage of Trump saying Obamacare should be allowed to fail before a repeal and replace option be pursued, Reid stated, extortion. He didn't let Obamacare fail because it wasn't failing. He's making it fail. He's trying to push it over the edge, take 21 million people's insurance away, and then essentially go back to Congress with hostages. And that's what she said. I know, right? And Eminem, when he released his rap about President Donald Trump, his 4-minute insult-filled video went viral. Eminem's rap covers everything from North Korea to the wall to Colin Kaepernick, and accuses and it accuses Trump of racism repeatedly. While Trump fans have offered their replies to Eminem and their own raps, Trump hasn't replied at all. But this article from the Conservative Tribune shows the humor in this, with some of these tweets that Trump fans have offered as their replies to Eminem, and it's really good. I wish Trump had really tweeted some of these. There's been quite a bit of talk about how people are expecting the president to respond via Twitter. Taking into account in the article, I decided to respond to the president's in the president's place with 10 rhyming tweets as I tried to put my imagination to work. I'll let Trump take it from here. The first one, when it comes to my concerns, you are the least. You haven't had a number one hit since the iPhone 5 release. That was a good one. And another, you say I don't care for the military. You lose. 14 Medal of Honor recipients endorse my campaign. Fake news. And even another, listing a song of his. Eminem, why bring up Kaepernick and the NFL? Did you lose yourself when you saw the latest from Roger Goodell? And I think Trump is getting into the, and I think that Trump supporters are getting into the swing of things here. I went to Puerto Rico. You need to get a clue. Come to think of it, I saw a guy in a hoodie cleaning up debris, but it wasn't you. And finally, this one on gun control. This one would have been great if it had come from Trump. Gun control now, you'll lose that fight. A famous guy named Marshall was arrested for gun charges in 2000. That was you, right? Now, I think it would have been funny if Trump had tweeted these. Eminem laid to rest. It's like I have said many times before. These people are rich beyond their wildest freaking dreams for their talents. Why do they have to always interject their ideas on things they know nothing about? And here's something else to think about, Eminem. The problem is not guns. It's hearts without God, homes without discipline, schools without prayer, and courts without justice. Period. You are listening to the New Wise Conservative Radio, brought to you on audio through Conservative Nation Media. The call-in number is 646-478-5284, and we will be back after these messages. The leftist media would like conservatives like us to think that we're just a few lonely voices in the wilderness, but don't be fooled. Americans that identify themselves as conservatives outnumber liberals by a 2-to-1 margin, according to numerous polls, even those by the liberals themselves. If you respect traditional American values, there's a place for you to call home on the internet. It's traditionalamericanmovement.com, or TradAM, as we call our home. Traditionalamericanmovement.com is the place where real conservatives can meet up. And without turf wars, find out what is new in the conservative revolution. Sorry about that. All on Conservative American Movement, all one word, .com. I'm sorry, all on Traditional American Movement, all one word, .com. That's www.traditionalamericanmovement.com, and I hope to see you there soon. TradAM is a liberal free website.
Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change?
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict, the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to stand for America now.
Been looking for an online gathering place, you know, a familiar screen, does everything you're used to, except give you grief for being a conservative? You gotta try the Tea Party community. At TPC, you'll know how everything works from the very first minute, and you'll probably find a lot of friends who are already there. Organize, communicate, share ideas, upcoming events, pictures, and videos. The Tea Party community connects and empowers like-minded, politically conservative people. Like you, sign up today at TeaPartyCommunity.com.
If you're wondering where Rush goes to do his show prep, you found it.
In a new segment of the show, NWCR devotes a section to the weekly news as reported from Ballotpedia's The Federal Tap, with a rounding up of the weekly political news of importance. Hopefully this will be a popular one. Trump signs executive orders seeking to ease ACA rules. President Donald Trump signed an executive order Thursday seeking to modify some of the elements of the health care insurance. Before I go further, there will be opponents to this because he signed an executive order to do this. But note that the people who will go against this never went against this same thing when Obama did it. But my idea on this one is Trump should go now farther and go to Congress to get it passed as a law so the next Democratic president can't undo what Trump just did. And that is, the order directs the Secretary of Labor to consider expanding access to association health plans, or AHPs, and potentially allow the sale of AHPs across state lines. It could expand the ability of small businesses and groups to pool together to buy health insurance plans that would be exempt from some of the ACA's requirements. The order also directs Department of Treasury, Labor and Health Human Services to consider expanding coverage through low-cost, short-term, limited-duration insurance. These plans do not have to follow ACA rules, such as the mandate to cover essential health benefits. Excuse me, I gotta shut this off on my other computer. Health benefits. The Obama administration limited these plans to a coverage duration of 3 months and made them non-renewable. President Trump's order directs his administration to consider allowing these short-term plans to cover a longer period of time and be renewed. White House confirms that Trump will end ACA cost-sharing reduction payments. And this is something I talked about earlier. In an email to reporters Friday, White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders said that the Trump administration would end cost-sharing reduction payments to the insurance companies selling Obamacare plans. Sanders said, based on guidance from the Department of Justice and the Health Department of Health and Human Services, has concluded that there is no appropriation for cost-sharing reduction payments to insurance companies under Obamacare. In the light of this analysis, the government cannot lawfully make the cost-sharing reduction payments. The bailout of insurance companies through these unlawful payments is yet another example of how the previous administration abused taxpayer dollars and skirted the law to prop up a broken system. Next, McConnell hints at ending the use of blue slips for judicial nominees. On Wednesday, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky indicated that the current practice of Senate Judiciary Committee regarding blue slips would no longer be practiced. A blue slip is just that, a piece of blue paper, a blue slip of paper. The blue slip in practice refers to a courtesy where a home state senator can prevent a judicial nomination from advancing by withholding the blue slip of paper given by the Senate Judiciary Committee chair. a Senate who fails to return their blue slip has effectively prevented the Judiciary Committee from conducting confirmation hearings, and a failure to receive a committee hearing typically prevents a nominee from being confirmed by the full Senate. And here's something that none of us have really heard, but this kind of thing is what has kept a lot of Trump's nominations from even being confirmed. He still does not have a lot of his people confirmed yet. Obama at this point in time had every one of them confirmed. The United States Constitution does not mandate the use of blue slips, and there is no Senate ruling mandating their usage. Senator McConnell expressed his view that the Senate Republicans would consider the failure of a senator to return a blue slip as simply notification of how they're not going to vote, not as an opportunity to blackball. Traditionally, adherence to the blue slip courtesy falls within the purview of the Senate Judiciary Committee chair. The current chair, Senator Chuck Grassley, a Republican of Iowa, has indicated previously his reluctance to abandon the practice. A spokesperson for Senator Grassley stated, "The chairman of the Judiciary Committee will determine how to apply the blue slip courtesy for federal judicial nominees, as has always been the practice. Over the years, chairmen have applied the courtesy differently, but the spirit of consultation has always remained." When asked whether McConnell was speaking for all Senate Republicans or Republicans on the Judiciary Committee, a McConnell spokesperson, Don Stewart, said, "No, he's been talking about his position on a matter for some time now. If you mean he's not announcing a committee position, then yes, he's not announcing a committee position." Home state senator for two of President Trump's judicial nominees, David Straws and Ryan Bounds, have indicated they would not return their blue slips for these nominees. EPA administrator issues proposed rule to repeal Obama Clean Power Act. Environmental Protection Agency, or the EPA administrator, Scott Pruitt, issued a proposed rule to repeal the Clean Power Plan, the Obama administration's regulation that would mandate reductions in carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gas emissions from new and existing power plants. Pruitt argued that the plan was premised on a novel and expansive view of the agency authority and ignored states' concerns and eroded longstanding and important partnerships that are necessary part of receiving positive environmental outcomes. Specifically, the EPA will change its legal interpretation of Section 111 of the Clean Air Act, on which the Clean Power Plan was based under the Obama administration, to the interpretation that the plan exceeds the EPA's legislative authority and thus should be repealed. The EPA also estimates that the repeal would provide up to $33 billion in avoided compliance costs. Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, Democrat in New York, and Mara Healey, Democrat in Massachusetts, announced that they would sue the EPA over the repeal. Healey argued that the decision to abandon the Clean Power Act or Clean Power Plan violates the law. Schneiderman argued that the repeal involves putting industry special interests ahead of New Yorkers and all American safety and health and environment. And they just won't get it, will they? This next one shows that Democrats who have been showing the people how out of touch they are continuing on their out-of-touch tour of duty. Feinstein running for sixth term in the Senate. Incumbent Senator Dianne Feinstein, Democrat of California, the oldest member of the U.S. Senate, confirmed that she would seek a sixth term in office. Although she won her 2012 re-election bid by 25 points, she could face the primary challenge from the wings of the Democratic Party, pushing for more progressive policies in Congress. One frequently mentioned name is California State President pro tempore Kevin DeLeon, who showed his fundraising prowess when he amassed a $2.8 million war chest for a potential lieutenant gubernatorial run. California utilizes a top two primary system, which allows all candidates to run and all voters to vote, but only the top two vote getters, regardless of party affiliation, go to the general election. And for the people who celebrate when things are done right to keep America safe, this one should make a few of us smile. U.S. Supreme Court dismisses one of two legal challenges to Trump's travel ban. On Tuesday, the U.S. Supreme Court issued an order in Trump versus International Refugee Assistance Program in which the court rejected a challenge to President Donald Trump's March 2017 executive order restricting immigration and refugee admissions into the United States. The court order, which nullified the judgment of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit, or the Fourth Circus, as Rush always called it, also sent the case back to the Fourth Circuit, which with instructions to dismiss the case as moot, meaning the challenge no longer had any practical impact. In its order, the Supreme Court held that the challenge to a provision of the executive order Section 2C had expired, and because of that provision of the order expired by its own terms on September 24, 2017, the appeal no longer presents a live case or controversy. And the last one, SCOTUS concludes October argument sitting with arguments in two cases. On Wednesday, U.S. Supreme Court concluded its argument sitting for October with arguments in two cases. The court heard arguments in 11 cases during its October sitting, which is the first of seven scheduled two-week argument sessions for the court's October 2017 term. The court will next convene for arguments on Monday, October 30th, the first day of the court's two-week November sitting. And we are running out of time now. I'm glad that you all were here. There was still a lot left, and that's probably because I got here late, but we are running out of time. I am glad for all of you who listen to this show and for all of you who keep coming back. We will be back next week with the show, and I'm glad that I was able to get here today. Hope that you all have a great week. God bless America. God bless our troops. And God bless us, everyone. Have a good day.
American girls and American guys, we'll always stand up and salute. We'll always recognize when we see old glory flying. There's a lot of men dead, so we can sleep in peace at night when we lay down our heads. My daddy served in the army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard till the day that he died. He wanted my mother, my brother, my sister, and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free. Now this nation that I love is falling under attack. A mighty sucker punch came flying in from somewhere in the back. As soon as we could see clearly through our big black eye, man, we lit up your world like the 4th of July. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking its fist. And the eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. Dog will fight when you rattle his cage, and you'll be sorry that you mess with the U.S. of A. 'Cause we'll put a boot in your ass, it's the American way. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list, and the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist, and the eagle will fly, and it's gone. Start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down.
courtesy of the red, white, and blue.
God bless America.